9, 8, 7.
Hello, and welcome to MassageTherapyRadio.com.
Hello, and welcome to MassageTherapyRadio.com, sponsors for the Florida State Massage Therapy Association's annual convention. I'm Eric Brown, and I'll be your host for today, along with my co-host, Scott Dartnell, who'll be monitoring and presenting the listener questions at the end of the interview. Our special guest today is George Casalius, who'll be discussing myofascial therapy and the application to low back pain. Now, this is the third interview in a series of presenter interviews that Massage Therapy Radio is hosting in conjunction with the Florida State Massage Therapy Association's annual convention being held July 8th to the 12th at the Omni Orlando Resort. And just a reminder that you'll need to register by June 12th because after that time, there will only be on-site registration. And I remember the lineup for on-site registration was pretty long last year, so you'll want to avoid that by registering today. I would like to thank our sponsor, Know Your Body Best. Be sure to click on the link on the landing page to check out all the fantastic products they offer to help you build your massage business. These broadcasts will be about 30 minutes long, and you'll have the opportunity to ask George questions during the interview. If you have a question for George, simply type it into the Q&A box that you'll see on the broadcast page with your name and location, and click the submit button. We'll do our best to get to as many of your questions as possible before the end of the call. Now, in this interview, George will be discussing myofascial therapy and the application to the low back. He'll talk about how his Olympic experiences have influenced his work. We'll learn some of the most common lower back injuries and syndromes that massage therapists are likely to treat. And George will share some new information that he learned at the 2007 International Fascial Research Congress and talk about the application of this new information on clinical strategies and treatment protocols. I would now like to introduce our guest, George Casalius. George is a licensed massage therapist and has practiced and taught structural integration and myofascial therapy for 30 years. He served as a member and vice chair of the Florida Board of Massage Therapy and was a chair of the National Certification Board during its developmental years. George has directed international sports massage teams for the 1996 British Olympic Association and for the 2004 Athens Olympics. He was inducted into the Massage Hall of Fame as a charter member in 2006. And for more information on George, you can visit his website at www.coreinstitute.com. Welcome, George.
Hello. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here on Massage Therapy Radio.
Great.
So let's just get right down to some questions.
Sure.
Now, George, why did you decide initially to pursue a career in structural integration, myofascial therapy, and sports body work?
Well, I was both a graduate student at Florida State University in 1975, and I was a member of the FSU Rugby Club. I had played rugby when I went to college and continued on in graduate school. It was because of a neck injury during a rugby tournament that I sought the first help that I had ever had in terms of manual therapies. I visited a chiropractor. He told me I was too tight and stiff. I needed to go to a massage therapist. She worked on me and really helped a great deal, but says, you know, you really are very tight. You need to stretch. So she sent me to a yoga class. And the yoga teacher, after about 6 weeks, says, you know, you're doing well, but you're very tight and very stiff. So I got the message early on that I was way too tight and way too stiff compared to most of the people that they were used to working with. And it was the yoga teacher that said, you need to get Rolfed. So my introduction to structural integration came from a rugby injury through chiropractic massage and yoga. And that was what changed me. I went for my first Rolfing session and could not believe the benefits I received even in the first session. And after going through all 10, I began to investigate what I needed to do, what I needed to study in order to learn structural integration.
So you really saw the impact that it had on you personally.
Both in terms of the physical relief, but I also noticed that there was an emotional leveling or a balancing that was unexpected. I had a number of people who were close to me recognized that I was calmer, that I was more at ease, that I seemed to be more emotionally at home with myself. I wasn't as anxious, I wasn't as nervous, and it was that specific interest that not only was I feeling better physically, but that the psychological improvement was also noticeable to me and to others around me.
Very interesting.
And I was studying psychology at the time, so it really fit right into what my goal was to work with people and to provide for them a better sense of emotional balance.
And how long ago was this?
Again, that started in 1975, in my second year of graduate school. I went to a massage school in 1978 and then completed my studies in structural integration at the Soma Institute here in Florida in 1979. So I've been doing it now for 30 years.
Well, relatively speaking, you're an old-timer.
You know, I guess I am. I'm not sure if that gives me any status in the profession, but it certainly feels like most of my adult life has been doing this. So more than half of my lifetime has been spent doing this. My interest in sports was very early on, from being an athlete both at the high school and college level, and then being very fortunate to work with Olympic athletes when they came to Tallahassee to train in 1995 from England for the Atlanta Olympics. So we had the British Olympic Association come to Tallahassee, and by then, by 1995, I had started a school of massage therapy 5 years earlier, the CORE Institute, and we were very lucky to get involved with the British Olympic Association and their efforts to bring the best care and therapies to their athletes, getting them ready for the 96 Olympics.
Yeah, so you've had some great experiences in terms of working with athletes, and we'll talk about those in a minute. But
sure.
You started the CORE Institute.
Right.
What got you interested in starting an institute, and how is that school unique in the field of massage therapy education?
Well, for 9 years, I worked for the Soma Institute of Neuromuscular Integration. That was an advanced training, intense sessions of structural integration, and I first was the assistant instructor for 5 years, and then in 1985 was allowed to start teaching the classes on my own, both here and in Germany. And it was after 5 years of doing this and being married and starting to raise a young family that my wife and I realized that I was spending almost 40 weeks a year on the road somewhere, and that I needed to probably figure out a way to stay home more, to teach in Tallahassee, where we were living at the time. And so we, without having a massage therapy school in the region, decided that we should open a school. There actually was a part-time evening school in Tallahassee, and the owner agreed that I should take it over and make it a full-time enterprise. So in 1990, we opened our doors. So now it's 19 and a half years later, and what's unique about us is that we teach both entry-level massage, but we believe from the very beginning that myofascial therapy and structural integration and sports body work should be a part of even entry-level training. We only train 80 students a year. We start two classes every spring, day and evening, and every fall in the day and evening, and spend about a third of our time focusing on structural and myofascial therapies. We also offer a lot of certification courses in these areas, and I also teach another 300-hour course in structural integration through the Institute. So structural integration and myofascial therapy and working with athletes and performers has always been a part of what we thought was the most interesting way for us to express what massage therapy could do to benefit both mind and body.
Okay. Now, you've been involved in the Olympics for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just go through with us, when did you first start getting involved with the Olympics, and how has that experience influenced your work with athletic performance?
We were very lucky, like I said, to have the school in Tallahassee when it was announced that the British Olympic Association would start to train its athletes in Tallahassee to acclimate them to warm weather, to the humidity that Atlanta would obviously have in August of 96. So this was announced in 1994. I got involved initially through the local organizer, who introduced me to the medical team from the BOA. And they were very interested in using massage therapy, but they had never used it as a training device. They'd always used massage therapy as a form of physical therapy for injured athletes and only doing massage on injured sites. But they were very open and very interested in the idea of using massage therapy as a way to help their athletes train at a higher level and be able to rebound faster for that level of intensity. So in 1995, when the first 250 athletes came over for a 3-week camp, we were ready with three 25-member teams, each working for 1 week, working incredible hours from 8 in the morning till 11 at night with just wonderful athletes. And what was fascinating to us from the very first summer experience of working with the BOA was the variety of athletes that we were able to work with. One moment you might have a synchronized swimmer who weighed probably 100 pounds, 105 pounds. The next moment you could have on your table a 300 pounds super heavyweight judo player. You could have athletes who were great in endurance, and a half hour later have an athlete who was excellent at sprints. So the variety of athletic bodies that we were working on, of the different training methods that each of them used, really was a learning experience for us. And what we had to do was adapt the myofascial therapy skills that we had to each of those athletes.
Yeah, what an incredible experience.
And that led to us working in 96 with the full team that came about a month and a half before the Olympics started, and we had 500 members of the team, both athletes and coaches and training staff. So we got to work with them both before the Olympics and at the Olympics, and it led to an even higher level of involvement by 2004 with myself and four others being the co-directors for the International Sports Massage Team of the Athens Olympics. So we were very fortunate perhaps just to be living in Tallahassee, being in the right place at the right time and getting that introduction to Olympic sports massage through the BOA. And then because of the success of massage at the Atlanta Games, it really became a part of the medical volunteer teams of almost all the Olympics that have happened since. I know we were involved in Salt Lake in 02, in Athens in 04, and even in Italy for the Winter Games in 2000 and six. And now I've been over to Scotland and to England, and I'm working with massage therapists who are hoping to be on the international team that'll be in London in 2012.
Absolutely incredible experiences. Just very briefly, what was that like working in Athens?
For me, it was very special, mainly because all of my grandparents are from Greece.
Yeah.
So working within the culture, working to really introduce massage therapy in a way that the Greek culture perhaps had experienced it in ancient times but was not utilizing it now, was the most interesting. We had 180 members on the team from 18 countries, and 20 of them were young physical therapy students from Greece. So we got to introduce, a group of new young healthcare professionals to how to use massage therapy, again, to support the athlete's level of fitness, to support their anxiety or psychological levels, not just to work on injuries. And clearly, we were not there as part of the physical therapy team. We were there to work on athletes who saw massage therapy as a performance enhancing, whether it was through the physical relaxation or the psychological issues. They saw us there as helping them perform at their highest levels. And for the Greek culture to experience that from the doctors and nurses and physical therapists that watched us and worked with us, to meeting athletes from all over the world and coaches from all over the world who perhaps couldn't afford to use massage therapy in their own home country, to have it available there, it was such a rewarding experience. And by the way, that was massage therapy for both the Olympics and the Paralympics. And even though there are only half the number of athletes at the Paralympics, only 5,000 compared to the 10,000 that come to the Olympics, they actually utilize more massages per athlete than we did at the Olympics. So the Paralympians really understand the benefits of using massage therapy as a regular part of both training and competition.
And once again, what an incredible career experience. Now, let's move forward here to the FSMTA convention.
Great.
This is coming up in July. Now, you're teaching a course on myofascial therapy for the lower back. Why did you choose that topic in particular, and what are people going to learn?
Well, I had to pick one region of the body, and that's been an especially important area for me, both personally and professionally. I would say of the thousands of people that I've treated over the years, about a third of them come in with some issue, either chronic or acute, in the lumbar region. So it's one of the most commonly worked areas, or areas that needs a lot of attention. And more recently, because of an injury that I had 5 years ago, actually 5 weeks before the 04 Olympics, I was injured in an auto accident where I broke 5 ribs and herniated 2 lumbar discs. So that injury has taught me more about both acute and chronic pain. The initial acute pain that I went to the Olympics with was certainly difficult to work with, but the chronic pain that developed afterwards was something that really made me focus on what are the best methods, what are the best strategies to use for the lower back region. Then going to the 2007 International Congress on Fascia Research, I learned a great deal more about what the researchers from all over the world were learning about the importance of the thoracolumbar aponeurosis, which is a large connective tissue tendinous sheet that covers everywhere from the mid-back all the way down through the sacrum. It's one of the thickest regions of connective tissue in the body. And we're learning more and more that it's really vital, not just for the protection of the muscles, the spinal column, and the organs deep to that lower back region, but it also provides somewhere between 70% and 80% of the mechanical force transmission of everything you do in terms of lifting with your lower back. And this is much more than what was believed for 40 to 50 years earlier, that muscles did the bulk of the work and the connective tissue and ligaments and tendons only a smaller percentage. That has been reversed, and the work of Serge Grakovetsky from first from Montreal, and now he's in a retirement but still doing research in France, clearly has shown that the thoracolumbar, or what some people call the lumbodorsal fascia, does the bulk of the work when lifting heavy weights. So for the athlete, it's important that we not only work with that area well, but we teach a lot of stretching and strengthening techniques for this vital region.
Okay, and for listeners on the phone that aren't aware of it, in 2007 there was an International Fascia Research Congress, and it was really a bringing together of researchers and clinicians to talk with one another and find out, you know, what's going on in the laboratory, and more importantly, how does that translate into, you know, our clinical work?
Exactly.
And you attended that?
I was there, and I was amazed at each of the days at how much I had learned and how much I still needed to learn. The first day was the biochemistry day, so much of it went over my head, but in reading the transcripts of that day, of looking at the articles that were written from each of the speakers, and of studying more about myofibroblast, a term that most massage therapists are just becoming familiar with, as I learned recently from an exercise physiology professor at FSU, the myofibroblast is seen as the muscle stem cell, what really is the ingredient of keeping not just the fascia, but the muscle system extremely healthy and vibrant. What we also learned, though, was that fascia is about 50 to 55% of this myofascial unit. It used to be seen as a much smaller percentage. We learned that it has smooth muscle cells of its own, and it's able to contract on its own when under undue pressure or severe trauma. So we're learning more and more that this shouldn't be seen as just small parts of the muscle skeletal system, but rather a very vibrant ingredient, indeed an organ system unto itself. We also know that it's this fascia, especially the outer layers of it, that is richly embedded with sensory neurons. So the way that we feel what's going on with our body, the way that we experience both pain and pleasure, is through the sensory neurons that are embedded throughout the body in the fascia. It's really the soft tissue of the nervous system is one way that you can look at it, and we have more of an impact on what is happening all over the body if we're able to restore health to this vital tissue.
Yeah, that the fascial congress really opened a lot of people's eyes. And I know I was just talking to Leon Chateau, who was one of the organizers of that, just speaking with him last weekend about some of the incredible research, and encourage anybody that's on the line to get to the next one, which is happening in Amsterdam.
It is happening in Amsterdam at the end of October, and I'm sure it will be a wonderful experience. This year what they're doing is that they'll go ahead with the same plan that we did in Boston at the Harvard Medical School of having 2 days of research, but this time it will be followed by 2 days of clinical workshops. So I think for the clinician, it'll be especially important. What was important about the first one was not only that it brought together the top people in research, education, and clinical practice, but it also was held at Harvard Medical School, which gave it, I guess, a status that perhaps it would not have had it been at some hotel conference room. Mm-hmm. The idea that the Harvard Medical School's anatomy staff got fully behind this and really was a part of the planning and the development, along with many other institutions and schools. Our school was one of the sponsors, FSMTA, AMTA. A number of the associations really stepped forward and gave it all the support that it could. So it brought together people not only from all over the world, but from all different layers of professionalism in terms of healthcare and academics.
Yeah, and really a historic event in our industry.
It is, and I think what was called for at the end of it was to really address the issue that fascia has been overlooked, that it needs to be one of the stronger systems that we begin to study and understand, because it will benefit everyone from the individual with acute pain who's just experienced an injury to the soft tissue, but especially to the person that's been in chronic pain, what's called chronic intractable pain, those individuals who have been told you're going to be hurting for the rest of your life, learn to live with it. These are the ones that probably will be able to benefit the most from a better understanding of how to both work, manipulate, and improve the fascial membranes.
Now, you've been working with fascia for your whole life or your whole career.
It's true.
As a structural integrator and doing myofascial therapy. How has what you've learned at the Fascial Congress changed the strategies you take in terms of the approach to the body or the treatment protocols that you use in treating low back pain or other conditions?
But I would say, first off, it has made me even more aware of the importance of going very slow and being very methodical when working with fascia, especially with regions of the body that are under undue stress for great hours every day, whether it's the low back, whether it's the bottom of the feet, whether it's the cervical column. There's regions of the body where the fascia really needs to be manipulated much more carefully than we ever knew before. So the slowness of speed, the increase in the heat that we can creatively cause that fixotropic phase change, being able to change the fascia from something that's hard and gelatinous to much more soluble and fluid. We have the ability to do that, and we need to work in a much more precise manner with, again, greater slowness of speed and an increase of pressure only based upon what that client's sensory nervous system can handle. We cannot think, I'm going to go in deeply and quickly and get right to all of those adhesions and assume that that's what's best for every client. We really need to begin to understand the sensation levels that we can easily affect by working in a much slower way, and how the client can adapt, can really integrate, and can help us with that through micro movements. And so we are including a lot more micro movements into the practice, into the hands-on practice than ever before. This is a strategy that we've used in the past. We're now really having the client work with us every step of the way during a 1 hour to 90-minute treatment.
Okay. Now, I just want to remind listeners, if you have any questions for George, please feel to just type them into the Q&A box you'll see on the broadcast page. If you want to put your name and location, that would be great, and click the submit button. And I know I'm monopolizing George's time here, but we'll see if we can get to a couple of questions before the end of the call. So please feel free to submit those. Again, he specializes some great experience in the field of sports massage, specialist in working with fascia as a structural integrator, myofascial therapist for 30 years. So send in those questions. Now, George, what are some of the most common lower back injuries and syndromes that massage therapists are likely to treat?
I would say that probably the most common is lumbar strain, and that's usually caused by an overstretching, a very quick overstretching of ligaments, of tendons, and of the muscles of the lower back, along with this large sheath of tendinous-like material called the thoracolumbar aponeurosis. Whether this overstretching comes from injury, some kind of immediate trauma, or even from improper use or work-related overuse, it creates microscopic tears in multiple layers of these tissues. The result is a severe contraction and internal scar tissue being developed around these micro tears. Some of those can certainly influence nerve receptor sites, can irritate nerves, and can add to that chronic long-term pain. Massage therapy, hydrotherapy, and thermal therapy are always used in these cases, but what we need to start doing is looking at how working with the lower back affects movement all the way through the shoulders and arms, and of course all the way down through the legs and into the feet. There is a connection that's made in this lumbar region through the tendon that we call thoracolumbar aponeurosis of the tissues of the latissimus dorsi above, feeding into the shoulder and neck, or into the shoulder and arm, and into the gluteus maximus below, feeding, of course, down into the legs and all the way into the feet. So it's really the linchpin of most of the key movements that we do every day. Even bending over to tie one's shoes is certainly affected when the low back is under extreme pressure and pain. After that, I would say that the most often injury that we're going to see is some kind of lumbar disc injury, whether it's a partial tear, whether it's a bulging disc, or even the stenosis that the narrowing of the spinal canal can cause in terms of pressure on multiple nerves. So we have a lot of people who don't just have low back pain, but that pain through the sciatic and through the femoral nerve extend all the way down into the leg and foot.
Now, for people that are therapists that want to understand this better, what are some educational resources? Maybe books, DVDs, websites, journals, training. How can therapists learn more about approaching fascia, maybe through structural integration or myofascial therapy? Any resources you'd suggest?
Well, I think that there are numerous books, but in terms of understanding both the anatomy of the body, in terms of looking at fascia as a primary component, and of understanding the effects of structural integration, I would recommend Tom Meyer's book, especially his new second edition of Anatomy Trains. It's just come out within the last two months. It's magnificent. It really amplifies what he did in the first book, which I think already was groundbreaking, in terms of looking at myofascial meridians, at looking at the connection of both superficial and deep layers of muscles and fascia that connect all the way from the foot to the hand, or from the leg up the back into the head or into the face on the front line. So looking at his linking of myofascial tissues, the full length of the body, both superficial and deep, and then looking at some of the strategies that he and others, another great book is Ed Maupin's book on the dynamics of gravity, and that's another book on structural integration. Certainly Ida Rolf's original book from the 1970s is a great philosophical look at what structural integration can do and how it's very important. And the final book I would say is Job's Body, really one of the the seminal books in understanding multiple systems of the body. His third chapter on a connective tissue is still a remarkable read. DVD-wise, I would recommend Integral Anatomy by Gil Headley. He has four DVDs going everywhere from skin and superficial fascia to deep fascia and myofascia to visceral fascia and to cranial fascia, showing us through dissection what these layers of fascia really look like, how they perform, how they're interrelated, how one layer is linked to the layer just deeper or just more superficial. There's even a great DVD that you can get now from Kinesis, which is Tom Meyer's school up in Maine. He is the distributor for a DVD from France called Strolling Under the Skin, and it's by a well-known French hand surgeon, and the remarkable videography that he has of fascia in vivo, the living fascia, how the dynamics of it are so much more intricate than what we ever believed before. That 30-minute DVD changed everything I knew about fascia.
Interesting.
And again, I mentioned earlier Serge Grekovetsky. I would recommend to people that they look for articles that he has written. He is the world's leading expert on mechanical force transmission, and he's really such a strong advocate for understanding the role of the thoracolumbar fascia in terms of all the movements that we do, but especially those that require lifting force.
Okay, some great recommendations. I appreciate that. And for listeners that are listening to this call, we did interview Thomas Myers, and you'll find him in the archive section at massagetherapyradio.com. Now, I understand you teach in Europe several times each year, including a retreat that CORE Institute sponsors on the Greek island of Santorini each June.
Right.
Are there major differences in the training of massage therapists throughout Europe, or is there a common educational standard?
Well, I think that there is a great deal of differences. I would say that in Germany, where I lived for 3 years at the beginning of my practice in the early 1980s, there is a two-year there's a two-year schooling that is much more like what some of the provinces of Canada, especially Ontario and British Columbia, do, somewhere between the 2,500 to 3,000 hours. Their massage therapy from the 1980s and perhaps before that was already a part of the national health care system. Massage therapists worked alongside of medical doctors and physiotherapists and health practitioners as a part of the national health insurance plan that all of the Germans that I knew really enjoyed utilizing. But in other countries like Greece, like Italy, like Spain, massage is really just starting and is much more where we were here in the States 30 to 40 years ago in terms of the amount of training that's necessary for massage. I was just in the UK. I taught in England and Scotland. There is no licensing yet in the UK, and the initial training is around 150 hours with one or two other segments of equal amounts of time available for those who would like to specialize. So even in the UK, the amount of time spent in education is minimal compared to what we're used to now in the United States. We're still finding in all of these countries excellent therapists because there seems to be a worldwide explosion of great education and information that every therapist has access to. There's great workshops going all over the world, and there's certainly the use of both books and DVDs as another way to enhance it. 30 years ago, there were probably only two or three books on the whole market for massage education, and probably only one, which was Tappan's book, that was used regularly by massage therapy schools. Now we have a proliferation of great massage therapy educational texts, from the anatomy to the pathology to client-therapist relationship to hydrotherapy and to massage practice of all the major disciplines. But what I would say is that the United States both has a lot to contribute and still a lot to learn from interacting with massage therapists from all over the world. So being at an Olympic Games when you're with therapists from 18 to 20 countries, or going to the Congress for Fascia Research, where you're going to meet clinicians from all over the world. I think we were represented in 07 by 23 countries. I think those kinds of experiences are very important. And right across our border, going into Canada, learning and integrating and studying with some of the provinces where 2,000 to 3,000 hours is considered basic education, is very important that we as American massage therapists look to the rest of the world, both for enlightenment and for collegial support.
Yep. Well said, and I'll just interject and make a plug for the World Massage Conference that's happening this November 12th to 17th, where we pull together online practitioners, researchers, clinicians, literally from all continents in this huge online event. So I want to encourage listeners to check out that as a resource as well, and that's the worldmassageconference.com coming up this November.
Wonderful.
Now, just before I pass the mic back on to Scott, and I'm apologizing here, I've kept you a little bit later than we anticipated.
That's all right.
I'm just wondering, what are his future plans for George? What do you have in store for the future?
Well, I've started working on a textbook that's part information about structural integration and myofascial therapy and sports body work, but also a memoir. I've decided that we have great textbooks. There's a lot of wonderful information, but I think I have a story to tell, both about the individuals that I've studied with, the individuals that I've been lucky enough to work with, the experiences that have really shaped me. So I've already started working on that, and hopefully next year at this time, I'll be back on the show announcing that book is finally published. So we're going to be working hard this next year. But my other goals are that the Core Institute, which we've been running now for 20 years, next January, will be going into hopefully the next phase of its evolution. And what I would like to see happen, what I think is important to maintain high-level educational standards, is to allow the Core Institute to become a not-for-profit, publicly owned school in the Tallahassee area, and have both graduates of the school and members of the community who are invested in the importance of massage therapy on a board that really helps us run it. I've really admired a number of other schools around the country who have done that and have become non-profit schools. We want to make sure that long after I'm no longer the director of the Core Institute, it's maintaining a very high level of educational standard.
It's a great initiative. Okay, let's touch base with our co-host, Scott Dartnell, and maybe we can take a few minutes to see what listeners are asking or what comments they have.
Thank you very much, Eric. George, there's lots of questions for you, and I just want to say thank you very much again for joining us tonight. You are such a talented man, and you're so humble you give credit to everyone else, and I just want to say thank you again for joining us this evening.
You're very welcome, Scott, but you do remember the saying that we stand on the shoulders of those who came before us.
Exactly. I'm going to go to our first few questions, and those first few questions are people that are wondering when you're coming to certain areas. I have one from Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, and they're asking, when are you coming? That's actually where I live, and I'm sure I have some friends listening to the broadcast tonight, and they're asking, have you taught in Canada, specifically Ontario, and if not, when are you coming?
I have not taught in Ontario, and I would love to. I have good friends in the Toronto area, so I would love to come up there. When I have taught in Canada, it has been primarily in Montreal, also in New Brunswick, and out on the West Coast in British Columbia. So I would like to come. I've spent some time in Canada, and Toronto in that area is certainly a place I would like to visit. We do have a wonderful instructor on our faculty, Brian Buckley, who lives in Canada, and I know has taught more around Canada than I have, so I know that our work is available there. But if anybody would like to have workshops in the area, please have them get a hold of us at the Institute. They can go to the website and be able to contact us, and we'd be glad to organize something in the future.
Well, I have one a little bit closer. We have Stan Jerome from Coral Springs, and he says, George, when will you be teaching a class in Fort Lauderdale?
Stan is a wonderful therapist. I met him in 1985 when he studied through the Soma Institute. That was still during the time that I was just learning to teach structural integration. And I'm going to be in Fort Lauderdale for the Florida AMTA at the end of July, the last weekend of July. I'll be teaching in Fort Lauderdale at the Sheraton Suites on Cypress Creek Road. So I'll make sure I get a hold of Stan and let him know that also. That's being sponsored by the Florida chapter of the AMTA.
Well, you have other friends actually asking you questions here, I think. It says, hi, George. It's Kathy Cohen from Fort Myers. You might want to find
wonderful.
The listeners about the Journal of Bodywork and Movement Therapies, which recently had all the research abstracts from the Fascial Research Congress.
And I had forgotten to mention that. Kathy, thank you. And Kathy is an incredible therapist and a wonderful teacher. I know that she has a very large audience of students who really, really trusted her to help them maintain the highest level of professionalism through her instruction in the Fort Myers area. But the journal is an excellent journal. You said that earlier, was it last week or before, you had Leon Chaitow, who is the founder of that journal. And I know that Judith Walker Delaney also works as one of the editors of that journal. I was on its international review board for a little while, and it's a tremendous resource.
I have a very detailed question from Herb Levin in Fort Lauderdale, and he says, hello, George. Sounds to me like fascia may act as functional tissue when overload is placed upon a musculotendinous structure. Now, this is very technical. At submaximal load, the fascia is supportive and non-contractile, certainly no less important than the individual muscle, but supportive as opposed to prime moving. Look forward to seeing you at the FSMTA, Herb Levin.
Herb and I have been friends for years. I always look forward to seeing him, and he's very accurate about that. I think what we're learning now, though, is that fascia has a much larger role in the stabilization of both movement and static structure. With our body is really never held in one place. There's always slight movements adjusting all of the time. But one of the things that we do know through osteopathic research that's been ongoing for 50 years is that 70% of all soft tissue injuries are primarily to fascial membranes. So even in minor accidents, when a person says, I just have a few aches and pains, nothing major, probably the result of that is some kind of fascial contraction, some kind of micro tearing of the fascial tissue, and then resulting in that some internal scarring of that tissue. And it's that internal scarring that over many years of one's life can become functionally progressive to the point that you're losing range of motion, you're losing strength, and you're certainly increasing pain.
What I find interesting, George, is that there's so many different types of fascial worker and practitioners that are out there. And it seems interesting to me that different types of fascial work have been trademarked. What's your feeling on that?
Well, I've never been one to trademark or try to license a technique or a strategy or even knowledge. I think that the knowledge that we gain through our experiences, through our practice, and if we decide at some point to teach others, I see it as community knowledge. So the ownership of names, of trademarks, of things like that have never been something that's really interested me. I remember many years ago thinking about this and thinking that we probably have fascists in our midst, individuals who name things after themselves, individuals who say that they're the only person that has ever discovered this, the only person that understands this. And I think our understanding, our knowledge of how the human body works is something that we've gained over countless cultures throughout the history of the world. I certainly don't forget to mention that there have been multiple cultures who have done work probably exactly like ours that existed 2,500 to 5,000 years ago. So ownership of names, ownerships of strategies or techniques, to me is not supportive of the community that I think we have built through massage therapy and through structural body work.
I have another question for you, and it's from a therapist asking, how do I get involved in working with athletes at events?
I think initially it's going to events. It's going to sporting events, meeting. For instance, in whatever part of the country that you live in, there are probably two clubs that are important to get involved in. One is the local running club. The other is the local triathletes club. There are definitely organizations out there locally that need the support of massage therapy and probably are a great client base for a lot of massage therapists. I have a good friend when he graduated the Soma Institute with me in 79, moved out to California and just went and set his table up at the Santa Monica Track Club. This is in 1979 when some of those athletes like Carl Lewis and Jackie Joyner Kersee were really at the beginning of their incredible careers. And he just went there and set up his table day after day after day until finally somebody said, what are you doing here and why do you do this every day? And he says, I think I'm a good massage therapist. I want to help you. He ended up working for that club for the next 12 years, going to countless international events, Olympics, world championships, became an integral part of that team. So he stuck his neck out, and he went out and met the athletes that he hoped to work with. And we've had other graduates of our school do similar things with professional athletes, especially during their off season, getting to meet them, working with their training staff, offering to volunteer for a week or two just to see if it's a possibility that their work could fit in. And I have a good friend, Tom Oakley, who used to live in Miami, who did that with the Miami Dolphins and worked with them for a number of years. But he was persistent. He kept going and meeting the athletic trainers, other members of the medical staff and the coaching staff until finally they says, yeah, let's give this guy a try. So sometimes you just have to be persistent and be a little bit more outward going in terms of meeting people.
What a great story. Thank you very much, George. I'd like to turn it over to our host, Eric, now.
Yeah, and I want to thank the listeners for hanging in there. Sorry, I took a little longer than anticipated. Now, George, just before we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I would hope that massage therapists, especially those who are new in the profession, take advantage of conventions like the FSMTA convention. It'll be in Orlando at the beginning of July, and I know AMTA this year, interestingly enough, has its national convention in Orlando at the end of September. But going to conventions is a great way to meet experienced massage therapists, to really get great education from wonderful instructors who come in from all over the country. Some of the leaders of the field will be both at the Florida convention and at the national convention this year, and to also go to the exhibit hall and see who the individuals are who make the products that we use, to get to know them better and to experience a community that they've just become a member of. So especially to our newer massage therapists, I would recommend to go to a convention and really have a wonderful experience within the confines of those walls.
Fabulous. Now, if you'd like to see George or any other remarkable presenters at the FSMTA annual convention that's happening from July 8th to 12th at the Omni Orlando Resort, just click the links to the website that you'll find on this broadcast page. And one last reminder that you'll need to register by June 12th, because after that there will only be on-site registration. So register today to avoid standing in line on-site. And to learn more about George's work, please visit his website at www.coreinstitute.com. George, I'd like to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here today and sharing your wisdom and insights. And we're looking forward to seeing you present at the FSMTA convention.
Thank you very much, Eric.
And be sure to tune in next week on June 4th when we'll be interviewing Richard Rossiter at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Eric Brown, and on behalf of my co-host, Scott Dartnell, and our partners at MassageTherapyRadio.com, I want to thank all of our listeners who tuned in today for all your wonderful questions, and we'll see you in Florida. Have a wonderful day.